What's up, Fanti fam? Just to let you know, I am out this week. Travell has the keys to the car, and we'll probably drive it off a cliff, let's be honest. I'm actually going to be listening just like y'all, but I will not be on this week's episode because I'm on break. And later on this summer, we'll probably do a swap where I bring in a special guest co-host for the episode. But enjoy this very special Fanti, and I'll see you next week.
Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fanti, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm entertainment journalist Travell Anderson, and as you already heard in the pre-roll, Jared is on vacation, so I'm the captain now, all by myself. I don't have to worry about his light-skinnedness infecting my brain. I've been plotting to spearhead an episode on my own for a minute because, you know, quite frankly, there are some complex and complicated conversations that don't need to be encumbered by the sissies, that C-I-S-C's, okay, not my word. The artist Shamir first said it to me a few weeks ago and I fell in love. Now, the one person who I knew I needed you all to hear and absorb some of their brilliance, they're here as my co-host for this episode. They're managing editor over at Wear Your Voice and author of the forthcoming Belly of the Beast, The Politics of Anti-Fatness as Anti-Blackness, which is out August 10th, which means you need to go ahead and pre-order it right now. We got a link in the description, okay? So make sure you go on and do that. Deshaun Harrison, welcome to Fanti.
Yes, hello. Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here, okay?
I'm really glad to be
here. I'm glad you said yes, all right?
It was a no-brainer. It was like a requirement.
Period, really. Okay? I'm unhinged this episode without Jared, so beware, everyone listening. Let's go ahead and get into our Pass the Popcorn segment. This is our segment to speak on whatever y'all are talking about on social media, and we want to be a little nosy in what is becoming an expectation on this show every time he hits the stage or drops a track. We've got to take some time to talk about Lil Nas X's Industry Baby track and video that came out late last week. If you've been under a rock, here's a quick clip. I've been bumping Industry Baby since it came out, okay? I don't know if you have Literally been, insane. But like, I felt like I had to contribute my streams this go around. So I literally play it like every morning. I'm putting a playlist together for my birthday this Period. Weekend. And Lil Nas X is like every other song. Cause I'm like, I need this to do what I need it to do. Exactly. But tell me, what were your initial thoughts, your initial reaction to the video?
First of all, I love Lil Nas X. Like, in love with him. Like, hey, if you hear this. No. And also, I mean, I hope he doesn't hear this because I'm kind of going to drag it a Uh-oh. Bit. But I really do. I love Lil Nas X. I appreciate all of what he is doing in the industry. Mm-hmm. I love the video. I love the song too. I know like a lot of folks were saying like, you know, they prefer the video over the song or whatever. I really love the song. And I thought that the video was really, really, really cute. I also thought the video had kind of already been done. It was very reminiscent to me of Cardi B's press video.
Oh, yeah.
Which I also love. But I thought that like the video was really cute. I want to know who Lil Nas X is. And I don't think that we're getting that in his artistry. Like, everything, to me, it feels like, it doesn't feel authentic. It feels like there is a plan, I guess, in place to sort of present him in a way that doesn't really feel honest or true to him.
Wow.
And it concerns me a bit because I'm like, I know that you know all about gender, so I don't have to explain this. Of course, we all know that gender is a performance, all of that, and we are performing. But there are performances that seem and feel and look more authentic to us than others, I think. And this performance, like, that he has been doing now for a while just feels like he's trying to, like, hold so much about what is diverse in the Black queer world that he's almost like a representation matters, like, thing that he's doing for every identity with an under yeah. our like umbrella, and not like showing who Lil Nas X is.
You know what?
And I really can't wait for that day for him to do that.
You know what? I appreciate and love this reflection because I don't disagree. You know, like I feel like the Lil Nas X that we're getting right now. Do you remember? Maybe this wasn't your experience, but this was my experience. When I first was coming into myself, particularly mm-hmm. when I moved out of my mama's house and I was in college and I was coming more into myself, yes. you know, I think I would do things just to like, to show that I was trying, right? To show that like,
and because I could.
Yeah, you know, when you want to uh-huh. find community and sometimes you feel like you got to do a little extra something in order to like be right. part of it. I feel like that is a little bit of what we're getting. It's that Lil Nas mm-hmm. X recognizes that he's the only person like himself. He's the only gay guy at this level, right? Right? And so I feel like he's being intentional about the shock value, about going mm-hmm. and being extra gay as much as he right. can. But mm-hmm. I spoke to him a few weeks ago, I'll put it that way, and I just think that everything that you're saying is right. And I think mm-hmm. that he is, I don't want to say it's not authentic, but I think part of it is mm-hmm. he just don't know who he is yet as a gay black man.
Yeah, I like that.
He's mm-hmm. finding himself on the national stage. And so
right.
that uncomfortable
and having to hold so much.
Yeah, and having to hold so much and deal with so many people's bullshit. And I think you're mm-hmm. right that the video, it definitely harkens back to Cardi B press. It gives us stuff that we've seen before, but that mm-hmm. naked shower scene, or quote unquote naked shower scene,
right.
baby, I said, y'all are playing in our faces. And you know what? I appreciate it because I think it will mean something or do something for somebody to see even this awkward mm-hmm. stage of him finding himself and playing with all of that on the public right. stage.
I agree. I think it's so cute. I think it's like I had a similar experience when I first like moved out of my mama's house, went to, you know what school we went to. And and was like finding like, you know, myself through my friends and their performances and how they showed up. It's like playing dress up. You put on one mm-hmm. thing, take it off, put on another thing, and like figure out what it is. It's nice seeing him go from this old town road to industry baby and like what has happened in between. It's very clear that he really is trying to pick up and take off whatever it is that's working and what's not. And obviously, all of it's working because, I mean, he is making hit after hit after yes. hit. Also, I don't know why he had Jack on there.
Oh, yeah. I didn't need that white man. I did not need that white man there at all. But, you know, I guess.
He's a bigger artist than Jack, though. So I was like, I don't know.
Well, one of the points that you made in our notes was like, this would have been a great opportunity to have another black queer artist with him.
Another gay artist.
Like, mm-hmm. and there are a variety of ones that he could have chosen from. There's plenty of them that like would have done it without question.
Right.
Many of them.
No,
and
absolutely.
So this was definitely a missed opportunity there. So I just wanted to say that.
It would have been cute for Mickey Blanco or Big Mama or somebody to be out there. It would have been very cute.
It would have been. If y'all are listening, Lil Nas X-y people, do better. Pray, please and thank you. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into some non-binary and trans shit. We'll be back. Bye, y'all.
Prepare yourself for the greatest pro wrestling podcast spectacular known as Tights and Fights. A back-dropping audio showcase that helps you understand the world of pro wrestling with a lot of love and no toxic masculinity. Featuring host Danielle Radford.
Time to kick butt and chew gum, and I'm all out of butts.
Lindsay Cal.
I'm a brutal Brit, and my fists were made to punch and hit.
And Hal Lublin.
I was doing the voiceover this whole time.
Hear us talk about pro wrestling's greatest triumphs and failures.
And make fun of its weekly absurdities.
On the Perfect Wrestling Podcast.
Tights and Fights. Every Saturday on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back. So as y'all know, I've been doing a lot of reporting on non-binary visibility and community this year. It started with this piece I wrote for Extra Magazine titled, What Does It Really Mean to Be Non-Binary? Then I did, which I interviewed Deshaun for. That'll be linked into the show notes as well, okay? Then I did a limited series podcast with Entertainment Weekly called Untold Stories Beyond the Binary, where I interviewed a variety of, like, non-binary folks about this moment in which it seems like our community is having, like, more and more representation in pop culture. Now, I wanted to bring this specific conversation to Fanti Table Talk, that's what I'm calling it, for some time. But to be frank, this isn't a conversation for cis and non-binary people. Y'all just get to listen and nod, okay, and eat your chicken, all right? So let me be clear, because sometimes, you know, the listeners don't really hear me when I say these things. If you are not non-binary or trans, I do not want to hear. Do not email me.
And don't email me either.
Period. Okay. Don't email us. We don't care. Stay in your place. Praise the Lord. Amen. To get us started, Deshaun, I kind of want to use something you said in the in that article as like a jumping off point. Mm-hmm. And you were describing to me how you see your identity and language as it relates to like non-binary identity. And you called it an imagined future, which is something that has like stuck with me since our interview. And I was hoping that you could further detail what you mean by that.
Yeah. So for me, I think in the interview I named where I got that from, and where I got that from is Latinx queer theorist by the name of Jose Munoz. And they named in Cruising Utopia that queerness is an imagined future, something that we don't yet embody, but that we hope to one day see or one day materialize through the work that we do in this moment. And to me, I sort of place that in proximity to and community with an Afro-pessimist take on you know, destroying world, as Zakiya Iman Jackson would say, or, you know, like finding this world-destroying level of queerness and removing ourselves from this colonial notion of gender to be able to imagine something else. And so non-binary, even though the language itself is something that I've always struggled with, because I just think that we only have access to Western language and the language or colonial language in general, and the language that we have access to is very limiting. But the concept of being non-binary to me, the idea of existing outside of the confines of gender, is an imagined future to me. It is something that I am actively working towards, something that I think is the only way forward if we are to ever experience a life where gender does not have us in its grasp, and where we are not encaged by gender, where we're not imprisoned by gender, and the harms that are associated with gender, right? Because we know that, you know, like gender itself is not the only cage, but that gender creates other cages that then entraps us inside of them. So it's like being inside of a prison, inside of a prison, inside of a prison. And so to me, non-binary identity, the idea, the concept, is an imagined future in that it is something that I am always hoping to embody and be able to embody more of as I continue to live, which really means that I am always actively trying to destroy gender in the way that it shows up in my life so that I am as far removed from being gendered at all as I possibly can.
Amen. This reminds me, I was listening to the podcast LGBTQ&A this morning with Jeffrey Masters, and they interviewed Kate Bornstein, who has been beating the non-binary drum for like 50 years or something like that. They've been out in these streets, and they said something about how using non-binary like as a label from their read is so much about just like being able to detail what we are not, as opposed to necessarily like defining something specific, because similar to what you're saying, at least this is my interpretation of it, because our potential identities and how we show up in the world could look so many different ways, many ways that we don't even have language for now, and how non-binary, they said, was like something that should be seen as just like a a way to detail what we are not, but not necessarily something to detail what we are, because what we are can be so many different things. And many of us don't yet, right, have the language or the access to imagination to really experience and live in the fullness of what it could look like to be beyond, outside of, or in between whatever gender is. And so that was something that resonated with me. I wanted to, you know, the article that I interviewed you for, the goal of it was to try to, like, talk about this rise in people from my vantage point who identify as non-binary but don't identify as trans. I don't know if I accomplished all of that in the piece or whatever, but it's something that is still happening even more and more, I feel like. And it's odd to me, I'm not gonna lie. as queer people, right, we want to provide space for folks to identify and use the language that they want to use, right, in the ways that they want to use it. And I think that's what makes this conversation difficult, is because, like, we don't want to remove anybody's agency in the process. At the same time, what does it mean when someone is, like, purposefully trying to distance themselves from trans people? And that's something that, like, I think about often.
Baby. It's something I think about often too. And I think that, I think it's so complicated. So I really, I love that this is the topic, and I love that, like, this is the purpose of the show, because it really is so complicated. Some people would suggest, like, well, we don't want to have to subscribe to this binary. By being non-binary, we don't want to have to choose between trans or cis. And it's like, sure, that's cute, right? Like, great. Yes. And by noting that you don't want to have to subscribe to the binary of trans versus cis, you acknowledge the fact that that one, gender is a binary for one, but two, that transness has to then exist outside of this binary. If you're creating these other binaries around it, to me, that means that you're naming, like, that transness somehow encapsulate or is included in this idea around gender binary. But if that is the case, then transness wouldn't have to exist. Because the reason why people are trans is because, I mean, there are many reasons why people are trans, but the reason why transness has to exist is because the binary says that the only people that can exist are cis women and cis men.
Right.
And if you exist outside of that identity or those identities, then you are trans, or you are outside the binary. And so it's like, I hold space for folks who are like, well, I don't want to have to choose between trans or cisness, and that's fine. I think the bigger issue and the bigger thing is that so many people have placed a monopoly on who, or rather have placed value on who gets to have monopoly over transness and who doesn't. And I think that what that looks like, and this is not the girl's fault at all, but I think that cis people have done a job in the last few years, as trans women have become hyper visible, of, like, sort of handing a monopoly over to trans women, as if they are who hold, like, transness in their hands, right? And all trans women are saying is, like, we want resources. We need resources. We need to be able to survive. We need to be able to show up. We need to be able to, like, protect ourselves, and we need to feel protected, and blah, 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 and all those things. And cis folks were like, well, that must mean that, like, these are the trans people. And so because these are the trans people, no one else who identifies as such can be trans, or we are, like, we are questioning putting stipulations on your transness because you are not one of the girls, right? To the point where even a lot of trans men and trans mask folks are having to navigate, like, what it means for them to identify as trans, even as people who would be quote unquote, quote unquote, 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 a binary trans person, right? And so I'm like, you know, I think that what we are witnessing in the rise of non-binary people not identifying as trans is that so many of them, I think, don't really see their identity as trans because of the violence of cis heteronormativity and the way that the way that cis normativity has, like, how it continues to permeate the world and how we understand the world to operate, and therefore determining who gets access to resources and who doesn't, and then creating, again, competition within competition, because that's how capitalism works and that's how anti-blackness works. to determine, well, if resources are limited, even though they're not, right? Things are not scarce. It's just that we don't have access to them. Mm. But if resources are limited, then I'm going to make sure that I'm the one who gets access to this, and I don't care who does it. Right. Mm-hmm. So then now we're having to fight each other over who can and cannot get access to resources because cis people determine who is and is not trans.
Oh, my God. OK. I love what you've just done there. Right. Because there is continuous discourse within trans community. Right. About mm-hmm. whether or not non-binary people can claim transness. As a result of that, there appears to be some intra-community conflict between mm-hmm. namely usually trans women, right, and non-binary right. folks. But what you've just done there is we shouldn't be fighting each other, right? Like it's mm-hmm. it's not that any one of us, right, have a claim over what is or what is not or who can and who cannot be trans. It's that cis heteronormativity has made is the real culprit in all of this, right? It's right. not it's not insert person here who, you know, right. feels however they feel about whether or not non-binary people fit in trans community. It's the fact that she was made to feel like she has to right. police this mm-hmm. particular space because of cis heteronormative right. all of that other stuff that you already mentioned. I love right. that. I love that framing because I don't think we engage in the conversation in that particular way. It often ends up being mm-hmm. non-binary people versus quote versus unquote
trans women.
Right, right. Trans women more often than not.
Literally.
And then there has been a rise. I don't know if I can say there's been a rise, but like I feel like we see more people today using he, they or she, they mm-hmm. pronoun conventions. I think to signal the precarious nature of gender, right? And the fact that yeah. there is some sort of expansiveness that they see and feel as it relates mm-hmm. to their gender. And so that's been something to witness, the multiplicity of how people are now articulating their gender. Is that something that you've seen similar right. on your end?
No, absolutely. There's so many he, they's and she, they's. And I think it's cute. I think it's like, no shade, like not cute, like oh it's cute, but like it's cute because I think that like I love that people are grappling with gender in that way. I do think though that it's people like, I'm gonna just say it, I think oh. that like this is I think that this is creating a violent moment or something that's gonna end up being more harmful than not. Mm. Because in my experience, a lot of the people who are like coming to understand themselves as like a he, they or a she, they, and this is a disclaimer, again, I'm not saying this is true for everyone, right. but just for so many people that I've witnessed and that I know in real life, it's because they are trying to accommodate for the way that they may be read by other people. Mm. And I think it's horrible to determine your gender or genderlessness based off of how other people read you. Because if the world is cis normative, then how other people read you may or may not ever look like the way that you feel, right? If we had to determine our gender or genderlessness based off of how other people read us, I think that so many of us would be misgendered continuously, and we are,
yeah.
right? Like that's why we're misgendered, because who we are is not generally how the rest of the world sees many of us, despite what nails we have mm-hmm. on or how long our hair is or what heels we have on, whatever. The world sees us as they see us. And I think allowing that to determine how you categorize your gender or genderlessness is violent. I think it's violent for yourself and for others. Mm. And I think it does you a disservice. I think that it leaves too much room for gender to never be something that we understand as violent, because we have to continuously shrink ourselves to make sure that the rest of the world is okay with who we are. I don't give a fuck about Period. Whether or not you see me as a man, a woman, non-binary, a gender, a monkey. I really don't care. I know that like how I'm showing up in whatever space is as they shine. And how you gender me might get you fucked up, but it also just means that it also means that you are the one who has an issue with projecting gender onto people without ever having a conversation about who they are. That has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with you. And I'm not going to allow for my pronouns to reflect other people's feelings about me. I used to be a non-binary person who went by he, him exclusively. And I did that because I thought it was very subversive. I still think it's subversive because I think people associate pronouns with gender way too often. Mm-hmm. Pronouns are not gender. And so I was like, call me he, him, I'm not a man. But then I got tired of being misgendered always. And then I was like, there was nothing for me to fall back on because they're like, oh, but you use he, him. And I'm like,
right,
okay.
Right.
So I stopped using it. But I do think there are lots of ways, I think, to be subversive in the way that you show up and honor how you show up while still being true to who you are and not allowing other people's feelings to determine that.
Yeah. You know, it's what's so interesting is I also was one of those people at a time that was like, use whatever pronouns that you want, mm-hmm. right? You know, because I'm good, because I know who I am. I'm good.
Right.
You know? But I will say, even today, like, people still use, you know, he, him pronouns for me. And it's because a lot of times they knew me when I was using he, him pronouns. And I don't often go that extra mile of, like, correcting people, particularly people that I know, right, specifically. But right. more and more, every time someone says he, him, and even especially so if it's somebody that I know, it's becoming more and more of an issue for me, like deeply internally. And part of it is, I think to what you're saying, is that's a beast of my own making in a lot of ways, right? Because I allowed it and still allow it, right? Like I just had, literally 3 weeks ago, just had a conversation. I think it was my second conversation with my mom, but my first conversation with my dad about like pronouns mm-hmm. and about like gendered language, period, right? So like, I'm not your son. Okay, I understand.
Right.
I understand that you feel that way and all of that, but I'm not your son. It is a requirement if you want me to be in your life and you want to be in mine that you begin to augment your language to mm-hmm. accurately reflect who I am. And I think you're right that like I had to get myself together to be able to say that, like, you're letting these people misgender you. You're complicit in your misgendering because, one, you're not correcting people. Two, you just allow things to happen and you excuse it because they knew you prior, right? Or they knew you when.
Right.
When in reality, there's still a responsibility. Like, they still need to recognize the language that you use for yourself now mm-hmm. and by any means necessary, right? Like whatever work they got to do in their head to dismiss the person that they knew previously and the language that they used previously,
right.
Like that's not on me to hold. Mm-hmm. That's something to make known, and then they need to do the work on their own to rise to the occasion. That's something that I'm still right. working through, praise the Lord. But
and we're gonna always be working through it.
Exactly, right? Like exactly. We talked a little bit about this gatekeeping that sometimes happens with transness. And I wanted to revisit that because like I'm going through something right now mm-hmm. in which it feels like I'm not trans enough for certain people in community. Mm-hmm. And they haven't said those things explicitly, but that's the only, you know, calculus that I can do in my head that like leads us to the position that we are right now. And it always strikes me as odd when we start tap dancing around that area of like who can be trans and who can't be trans and whether or not trans people are like this idea of binary trans people
right.
is always interesting. And I feel like I'm probably complicit in a lot of that perpetuating, you know, that language as well. But the more and more I think about it, it just all seems odd to me mm-hmm. how we break that down. So I wanted to hear you talk a little bit more about like just navigating trans spaces as a non-binary trans person.
I'm having to get myself together because baby, when I tell you last year, I had an experience. I will not name the organization, nor will I name any of the people. However, I worked at a nonprofit organization here in Atlanta last year, 2020. And it's a Black trans-led organization. Mm-hmm. And the executive director is a Black trans woman. And then everyone else on the team at the time, there was another Black trans woman, a Black trans man, and then two non-binary trans people. And my first week, first or second week working there, my boss, who was the ED, who is a Black trans woman, called me for our one-on-one conversation. Supposed to be talking about work things, like my work plan and stuff like that. And she stated essentially that non-binary is like, it's a stop onto being a trans woman or a trans man. Mm. And then she talked about how she was at one point a non-binary person, and it was like, you know, it was a stop for her, and how she understands what I'm going through because, you know, she was once there, mm-hmm. and she's, you know, excited for me to arrive to where she is. And the conversation went on, and she named that non-binary-ness is not trans.
Wow.
And it halted our work. This is like an organizing entity in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And it halted the work that we were doing in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of like uprisings happening and whatnot. It halted what we were doing because here you have like this Black trans-led organization. You hire three non-binary people, but you aren't recognizing non-binariness as trans. And so it's like, are we here to meet a quota? Mm-hmm. What is the reason for why we're here? And we had to go through an entire mediated process only for us to still land nowhere. But wow. I'm naming that experience to say that, like, I ended up quitting. One of my other like coworkers, who was also one of my really good friends, was fired. But the environment was like, it was such a difficult environment to work in because we're working on issues that directly affect trans people and have directly affected us, mm-hmm. right? Like in ways that some of the folks we work with didn't have to experience. And yet there was still no like room and no place to actually really truly work through what the issue was with non-binary trans people. There was an acknowledgement of the fact that there's a sort of divide between mm-hmm. non-binary trans folks and quote unquote binary trans folks. But beyond that, there was nothing being offered. And so I say that to say that navigating trans spaces has been difficult for me because, like I was naming earlier, like I think that all of this is really a cis issue. But mm-hmm. I think that so many of us have internalized this as an us issue because, again, we understand resources to be scarce and therefore important to protect of our own first yeah. and foremost before acknowledging others. And what I don't understand is if we know that there's strength in numbers, why are we not working to build those numbers mm-hmm. and to therefore build that strength? But I think like it's been difficult because people talk about, you know, like, again, going off of how you're read or what you're assumed to be, which is bioessentialist and mm-hmm. biodeterminist and gender essentialist. And it's like, we don't really have a reason to do this, right? Because we know that if some of the folks that we work with are these Black trans women who are on the corner, like having to do sex work to have their needs met, mm-hmm. right? Who don't have surgeries, who are not on moans, who are not like doing any of the things, we're not denying her transness. Mm-hmm. That's not something we're going to do, and as we shouldn't. And so if that is the case, right, like if we can hold that type of nuance to be able to be clear that she is a trans woman through and through, irrespective of what she does and does not have, I don't know why it can't translate to other places. But then we also yeah. know that like some trans spaces are very messy and would deny her transness because she is not on moans and because she doesn't have her surgeries. And so it's like we have deeply invested in like this white supremacist, cis normative way of being, this respectability politic, so much of which has built ballroom, has built the culture, and we don't want to let go of it. And so it's been difficult for me, honestly, like to navigate that because the girls don't. And by the girls, I don't just mean just the girls, but girls being gender expanse, mm-hmm. don't like to hold the nuances and the complexities of the things, but also because people don't want to read and then don't know what gender really actually is and then have so much to offer around it based solely off of their own experience. And sorry, Stink, but our experiences alone are not enough to determine how the rest of the world works. So
I'm over here screaming. The idea that some people believe that being non-binary is a pit stop on the way to trans manhood or trans womanhood, it resonates because that's how some of us are treated in community. Everybody wants to know when you're going to go forward, like when's the next step? Mm-hmm. And while that may be true for plenty of people, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be all of our experiences. And so,
right. And there's room to not make it so that there's not like a gotcha moment when you decide period. That's what you like want to do. Like it's about who we are in the moment and not who you determine us to be.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No. The main thing that I take away from what you've said is that like we ourselves as Black, queer, trans people can also be perpetuators of the violences of the cis heteronormativity.
Right.
I think I said in a couple episodes ago that like Black trans women can be trash too. And I want to be clear what I'm saying.
It's true.
Is that we all have
work to do.
We saw
what Janet Mock did.
Oh, well, okay. but we all have work to do to constantly unlearn, right, the stuff that we have been taught, right, that we haven't now internalized and end up turning back out on our own community. Like, we all have work to do.
Right.
Okay, two quick things because we're running up on time. I wanted to know your thoughts around just like the whole gender marker on ID conversation, right? Biden administration announced earlier this year that by the end of the year, folks will be able to get an X or whatever in the place of a male or female on federal documents and stuff like that. And there's been a lot of conversation, I think, in community about specifically non-binary and trans folks, like whether or not that is something that we, one, actually asked for, and two, will will participate in. And I wanted to hear from you, like, is that something that you intend to do or not, or what?
That is something that I have been interested in. I experienced a lot of, I don't want to call it gender dysphoria, but I am very triggered very often when I have to, like, fill out documents and have to check mail. It really can ruin my entire day.
Same.
So having that as an option, I think, would be beautiful. I would appreciate that. What I am thinking about, though, is what type of accommodations come along with being able to mark our genders as gender neutral or non-binary, and also what type of resources are going to be put in place to make sure that people who don't have insurance, people who don't have money, people who don't have access to certain like things are able to do that. So that like that's my biggest thing, but if all the things are set in place and there's like enough resources, I absolutely would do that because I hate checking mail on all of my shit.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to not have to.
Same. I feel the exact same way. And I know that there's conversation from folks who talk about like, you know, to have an X on your ID or your identification, like it's like outing yourself, right, when you go to the airport or when you got to go to the DMV or whatever. And I recognize and hold space for that. At the same time, I'm like, I'm a visibly non-binary trans person.
Right.
And so like, whatever violences I might face, they gonna come, you know? It would be great if, at minimum, I didn't have to, you know, enact violence against myself by misgendering myself when I'm filling out these various forms.
Right.
Before we go, tell the people about your book that's coming out, Belly of the Beast, The Politics of Anti-Fatness as Anti-Blackness.
Yes. So I actually talk about gender in this book. I wrote this book last year in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of the uprisings, in the middle of working two jobs. But it was very important for me to write this book to bring some clarity to the violent ways that fat Black mask folks, trans mask folks, non-binary mask presenting folks, and cis men are engaged by police, by the medical industry, by gender, and other like entities, and like the importance of not only like abolishing all of these things, but thinking about the fact that thinking rather of abolition as a starting point and not an end. Mm. I think that like we oftentimes talk about abolition as if that is the end goal, but I think that abolishing institutions is only half the job, because institutions are built first with ideology, with thoughts, with feelings that are associated with the power to build those institutions. And so in the book, I'm writing about like desire and desirability politics. I'm writing about moving beyond self-love and body positivity. I'm writing about the ways that health as like a biomarker or as a marker of one's ability is short-sighted, because it's health as we know it, like within the U.S., within the medical industry, like was started through like the subjugation of the slave, and writing about, you know, the commonality or the similarities between the war on drugs and the war on obesity. Mm. Talking about a lot of things in the book, talking about the ways that fat Black folks are policed, and the criminal justice system. There's a lot of things that are happening in this book, but it was so important to me to write this because I think that within Black studies, fat studies, and women, gender, sexuality studies, like all these things are sort of talked about, but separately, mm-hmm. and never together. And never are we exploring like the ways that directly affects trans men, trans mass folks, non-binary mass folks, and cis men. And so it was just really important for me to like walk us through what all that looks like. So I'm excited about it. It'll be out August 10th of this year. So just like 15 days away.
Okay. In a week or two. Okay. Y'all make sure y'all go ahead and pre-order it right now. We got the link in the description. I'm not playing with y'all. Okay. All you well-meaning white folk who listen to us and tell us y'all love the show and all of that, go ahead and support. Go ahead and get this book. Y'all know who I'm talking about, okay? Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Deshaun's going to stick with me through our dishonorable mentions. As we go to a break, again, make sure you're showing up for Black trans people, supporting a creator this week. You can support Deshaun, okay? Go ahead and do that. Tweet or post using hashtag FantiFam. We'll be jumping in, responding to your posts on Twitter and Instagram at FantiPodcast. I'm curious. I want to hear from trans and non-binary people your thoughts about all of this. We will be right back.
Hey folks, it's me, James Arthur M., host of Minority Corner, your home through these wild times for weekly doses of pop culture, history, news, nerdy stuff, and more through a BIPOC queer and allied lens. Sexy ass from Moonlight, who was in the third act of Moonlight, Trevante Rhodes, who was like, I'm all grown up and I work out. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do.
Let me have a case.
Ew, gross.
This is just, you know what? It's been a long pandemic, girl. What are you doing now to deconstruct this system?
He basically did a covert genocide of Black people.
So join me and some of your new BFFs every Friday here on Maximum Fun to stay informed, empowered, and have some fun. Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
Welcome back, beautiful people. We're going to get straight into our dishonorable mentions. I'm saving and sparing Deshaun from your listener feedback. So Jared and I will do a double helping of that next week when he gets back. Dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or their foolishness. Deshaun, as our guest, will you go first?
I will. So my first is an honorable mention to Miss Megan Thee Stallion.
Yes.
She and her knees have been putting on for the girls for quite some time now. And I think that she has been experiencing a lot of fucking bullshit in the last couple of weeks, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, really for longer than that, but especially in the last couple of weeks. And so I'm going to give her an honorable mention because I think that she deserves it. I think that she's had a great year and a half. She has like really been putting in a lot of fucking work and doesn't deserve a quarter of what she's been experiencing with these cis niggas and the way that they engage Black women and her in particular. Mm-hmm. So shout out to Meg. Keep putting on. Please, 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 please give if you're listening to this, please give us like an extended Tina Snow album. I know you recorded some more songs other than the ones that's on that track, on that mixtape. So please give us, you know, an extended version. I would very much appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes.
So much.
Yes. What's your next honorable mention, dishonorable mention?
My next one is also an honorable mention. And I just want to love on queer niggas who are living with HIV.
Yes.
I don't think that queer niggas living with HIV get enough love, get enough care, get enough respect, get to be held enough. And after what the toddler said yesterday on the Rolling Loud stage, I just want to love on queer niggas living with HIV. Yeah. I'm in community with so many people, mm-hmm. so many queer niggas, queer and trans niggas who are living with HIV and who are navigating the stigmas, mm-hmm. the stigmatization around living with it and trying to get resources for living with it and all of that. And it's like, I just want to like reach out and grab and hold everybody yes. that I can in my arms. Let y'all know that y'all are loved and held and cared for by me. And it's always fuck these niggas. Fuck these other niggas because I'm down for my niggas. That's yes. what it is always. And I live for y'all and I love y'all and y'all have a place in my heart always. So that's, I had two honorable mentions because I can't talk about
Smart.
The toddler. I get upset.
Smart. And I love that you call him the toddler. I've been calling him the boo-boo. Because, you know, he is a fool and he's one of my dishonorable Truly. Mentions. If you don't know the story we're talking about, Period. Google it because he's trash. And y'all should delete all the music, okay? Don't go to the concerts, all of that. Fuck him. And then I wanted to, I don't know if this is an honorable mention or dishonorable mention, but I did want to note a number of months ago, I believe, I spoke about Ed Buck and how he's been killing and drugging Black queer men here in Los Angeles. He was convicted today of nine counts of stuff. And I know, you know, we got our feelings about the carceral system and you know, put mm-hmm. all of them motherfuckers. But his ass deserves some sort of retribution for the violence that he has enacted upon countless named and unnamed Black queer men. So just wanted to recognize right. that. And then as we wrap up, as always, this is our special segment. Black history is happening every day. When we look at the audacity of Lil Nas X as an artist that is queer out loud, we've got to remember the torchbearers who came before us. And I want to take a few seconds to recognize the queen of disco, the one and only Sylvester James Jr., also just known as Sylvester. If you don't know who he is, do yourself a favor, look him up. I stumbled on this short doc about Sylvester's life and experience on YouTube that you should check out called Love Me Like You Should. Sylvester was, I feel like, today, we might use non-binary, gender non-conforming, etc. for Sylvester. But either way, Sylvester did what needed to be done publicly on the mainstream stage as a Black, effeminate, presenting queer person and, like, performed on the American Bandstand, which, for the kids, that was a huge program back in the day. It was a big deal. And so I want to play a quick clip from Sylvester and Two Tons of Fun, which is what he called his two backup dancers, from their performance on American Bandstand in 1978. That is Sylvester performing a little bit of Mighty Real, which you all, if you're not familiar with it, you need to check out. It's just like a good disco dance track. So shout out to Sylvester. As we wrap up, I do want to again make all of y'all go buy Deshaun's book, Belly of the Beast, The Politics of Anti-Fatness as Anti-Blackness. It comes out August 10th, and y'all know how I always say, get it from a Black-owned bookstore, get it from a queer-owned bookstore, get it from, you know, a local bookstore. Mm-hmm. But if not, we got the publisher link in the description, because you can get it directly from mm-hmm. them, too. All right, just make sure you get it. Deshaun, I want to thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. Tell the people where they can follow you, find out more about your work, etc.
Yes. No, thank you for having me. I'll tell a really quick story. I remember when I first met you, you didn't meet me, but I met you at Morehouse. You gave a talk and you walked onto stage. We were in Bank of America and you walked onto stage in your heels and you gave a talk. And I was like, I literally love Travelle. I had already known of your work because I knew Fatima and I thought that both of y'all were just like trailblazers. So it's an honor to like have this full circle moment. And to now, like, Travelle's following me on Twitter and Instagram, and, like, we keep talking, I'm like, yes, honey. So it really is an honor, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at DashaunLH, DashaunLH, on both Twitter and Instagram.
Yes, make sure you follow them. I love that story. I completely forgot about that talk. But, you know, we've been out here. I do want to, if you're listening to this conversation out there and it piqued your interest and you want more of this good, check out another episode, episode 65, called Gender is a Scam, conversation between me and Jared, in which I asked him a whole bunch of questions to help him question his cisness. It was great. And it was like an hour and a half episode. That's longest episode we ever done. If you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure you give us a 5-star review. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet us at Fanti Podcast or follow us on Instagram at Fanti Podcast and use the hashtag Fanti Fam. You can always send us an email at fanti@maximumfun.org and become a member of the Maximum Family at maximumfun.org/join. Our music is brought to you by Corice, that's Core.ece, wherever you get Slayworthy audio. Graphics by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. I've never had to do this entire outro all by myself, but I think I'm doing a pretty good job. Our producer is the one and only Laura Swisher. Yes, I did both sounds. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
Was it late?
It was very late.